Okay, have you ever like trying to buy something on your phone and the button is just impossibly tiny, you know? Or you're on a news site and reading means constant pinching, zooming, scrolling forever. It's super frustrating, right? Today, we're doing a deep dive into fixing exactly that. We're talking responsive design for mobile SEO, a universal approach. Our mission here is really to unpack the strategies that make sure your website, your online presence looks great, and maybe more importantly, works perfectly. Doesn't matter if someone's on a huge desktop screen, a tablet, or, you know, the smallest phone. We're pulling from this really comprehensive article that basically gives us a roadmap. It shows why responsive design isn't just a nice extra anymore. It's essential.
Absolutely. And that's really the key, isn't it? Navigating this world where everyone's using different devices, this deep dive, it's going to give you those crucial nuggets of knowledge. Understanding this universal approach, it can seriously boost your online presence, making sure you reach everyone, wherever they are, whatever they're using.
So let's get straight into it. Why is responsive design just so critical right now? I mean, at its heart, it's about changing the user experience, right? Fundamentally. Think about, say, Alex running an online t-shirt store. Before the site was responsive, mobile users pop in, get annoyed trying to quit things, and they're gone. But with a good responsive site, everything just fits. The images, text, buttons, big screen, tiny screen, that smooth experience, it really builds engagement. It gets rid of that immediate, ugh, I have to zoom feeling, which, let's be honest, makes anyone hit back. When it just works, user satisfaction goes way up. People come back, they actually enjoy looking around.
And what's really powerful is seeing how that better user experience directly impacts the business side. Tangible results. We're talking people staying on the site longer, so lower bounce rates, definitely. And ultimately, higher conversion rates. When a business like Alex's invests in this, you often see customer loyalty really jump. People remember a good experience. And that doesn't just help the brand's reputation, it actually drives word of mouth. You know, people telling their friends.
Yeah, that makes sense. And beyond just looking good and being easy to use, site speed comes into play massively, doesn't it? That affects keeping users and your search ranking. A good responsive site, it optimizes images smartly, cleans up the code, so it loads faster, even on spotty Wi-Fi or mobile data. I know speed is critical, but what's the actual, like, number? What does a small delay cost?
That's a great point to nail down. The data is pretty, well, stark. Studies consistently show that just a 1 second delay in page load, that can mean a 7% drop in conversions.
Wow, 7%.
7%, yeah. For a business like Alex's t-shirt shop, every second literally costs money. Direct hit to the bottom line.
That's really eye-opening. 1 second.
Absolutely. And this ties straight into the huge SEO benefits. Search engines, especially Google, they increasingly favor responsive sites. Why? Because they work for everyone. They're accessible. Plus, responsive design avoids those duplicate content problems you get with separate mobile sites, you know, MNOT sites.
Right.
But the real kicker, the game changer, is Google's mobile-first indexing. Basically, Google ranks you based primarily on your mobile site now. So if your site isn't mobile optimized, you're losing traffic, losing potential customers. It makes responsive design just essential, not just a best practice, it's a necessity for staying visible in search results.
And practically speaking, for the people actually managing the website, the businesses, the web admins, responsive design makes life so much easier, right? It simplifies maintenance hugely. Trying to keep a separate desktop and a mobile version updated, that's a nightmare. Resource heavy, easy to make mistakes. Responsive puts it all in one framework. Update something once, content design, whatever, and it updates everywhere. Saves so much time, saves resources, and keeps the branding consistent, which is, you know, super important for trust.
And if we broaden the view slightly, it connects directly to digital inclusion, to accessibility, which is vital. Responsive design inherently helps ensure all users, including those with disabilities, can access the content easily. The layout adjusts, it adapts to different needs, things like making text resizing work properly or ensuring keyboard navigation is smooth, handling voice commands. It becomes much more manageable. This isn't just about being inclusive, though that's key. It also helps meet legal requirements in many places. And fundamentally, it just broadens your audience reach. You're not shutting anyone out.
Okay, so we've really hammered home the why. Responsive design is non-negotiable. But for a lot of people, the big question is how? How do you actually build one that works well? Let's talk about the building blocks, the core components that make it tick.
Right. So the absolute foundation, the heart of it, is flexible grids. Instead of using fixed pixels, like in old school design, these grids use percentages or other flexible units. This lets the content flow and adapt. it reshapes itself to fit the screen, basically. Mm. Keeps things looking good, whether you're on Alex's t-shirt shop on a tiny phone or a massive monitor. Though, a common trap is thinking grids solve everything. You still have to really consider content hierarchy so things don't just shrink into unreadable mush.
Okay, flexible grids. And then media queries come in. They sound powerful.
They are, yeah. Media queries are CSS rules that let developers apply specific styles based on the device's characteristics.
Like screen size.
Exactly. Screen width, height, orientation, even resolution. It's like giving the website little instructions. Hey, if the screen is less than, say, 600 pixels wide, use this layout.
Oh, okay. So that's how you get like a navigation bar across the top on desktop.
Mm.
But it turns into one of those little hamburger menu icons on mobile.
Precisely. Keeps the navigation clean and usable on a smaller touchscreen.
Makes sense. What about images? They can really slow things down.
Critically important, images and performance. The source material really stresses using HTML attributes like surset and sizes. These aren't just about resizing an image. They let the browser intelligently choose the best image file to download for that specific situation.
So not just one giant image for everyone.
No, exactly. It looks at the screen size, the resolution, and picks the most efficient version. So you get crisp visuals on a high-res desktop, but mobile users don't waste data downloading huge files they don't need. Think of Alex's site again. High-res shots for desktop, so you see the t-shirt print detail, but smaller, optimized versions for mobile. Faster load still looks good.
Got it. And for reading text comfortably, that changes on different screens too.
Absolutely. Flexible typography is key here. It means setting font sizes, line heights, even spacing, using relative units, things like M or rem instead of fixed pixels.
What's the difference between M and rem, quickly?
Well, M is relative to the parent element's font size, which can sometimes cascade in ways you don't expect. Rem, on the other hand, is relative to the root element's font size, usually the HTML tag.
Mm.
Using rem often gives you more predictable control over the whole typographic scale, ensuring text adjusts fluidly and stays readable everywhere. Not too tiny on mobile, not weirdly huge on desktop.
Okay, that distinction is useful.
Yeah, and all this kind of leads into the mobile-first approach, which isn't just a technique, it's more of a core philosophy now. It means you actually design for the smallest screen, the mobile view first. Focus on the essential content, the core functions.
And then scale up.
And then you progressively enhance the design for tablets, then desktops, add the extras back in for larger screens. It often forces you to prioritize, leads to cleaner code, better performance, especially on mobile. And it aligns perfectly with Google's whole mobile-first indexing thing we mentioned.
Okay, we get the building blocks. Mm-hmm. Grids, queries, images, typography, mobile-first. So how do you actually implement this? How does Alex get that t-shirt shop responsive? What are the practical steps?
Well, first, choosing a framework can be a huge help, right? Like Bootstrap or Foundation.
Definitely. Frameworks like Bootstrap, Foundation, Tailwind CSS, they provide pre-built responsive components.
Mm-hmm.
Grids, buttons, navigation, all designed to adapt. It can save a massive amount of development time and effort compared to starting from scratch.
And then testing. You have to test everywhere, don't you?
Oh, absolutely critical. Mm-hmm. You can't just test on your own phone and computer. You need to use tools like BrowserStack or similar services that let you see how your site looks and behaves on a huge range of different devices, browsers, and operating systems. Mm-hmm. And Google's mobile-friendly test is essential, too, just for that quick check and validation from Google's perspective.
Right.
And beyond the framework and testing, there's optimizing for touch. That's a really crucial detail for mobile. Think about using your finger versus a mouse pointer. Buttons need to be big enough to tap reliably. Not those tiny little things.
Exactly. Links need enough space around them so you don't accidentally hit the wrong one. And you have to avoid relying on hover effects, things that only appear when a mouse pointer hovers over them. That just doesn't work well on touchscreens and frustrates users. Alex's Add to Cart button. If it's tiny or hard to tap, sales just won't happen. Simple as that.
Yeah, that frustration factor again.
Yeah.
Which brings us to common mistakes, the pitfalls to avoid. You mentioned speed before. Neglecting mobile load times must be a big one.
Huge. We saw the 7% conversion drop per second. It's massive. You absolutely have to use tools like Google Page Speed Insights. It doesn't just score you, it tells you what to fix. Optimize those images, minify CSS and JavaScript.
Minify, what's that exactly?
It's being as removing all the unnecessary characters from the code file's whitespace, comments to make the file smaller and faster to download. Every little bit helps. Caching is crucial too. Basically telling the browser to save parts of your site so it doesn't have to re-download everything every visit.
Okay, so speed is paramount.
Mm.
What else trips people up?
Another big one is overlooking content hierarchy on small screens. You can't just let everything stack up randomly. using clear headings, H1, H2, H3s, subheadings, maybe bullet points, it becomes even more critical to make information scannable and digestible when space is tight.
Right, making it easy to grasp quickly.
Exactly. And finally, ignoring accessibility standards. We touched on this, but it's worth repeating. Things like adjustable text sizes, providing alt text descriptions for images, which screen readers use, ensuring you can navigate using just a keyboard. These aren't optional extras. They're essential for inclusion, often required legally, and just good practice for reaching everyone.
So let's say you've done all this. You've built your responsive site, avoided the pitfalls. How do you know if it's actually working? How do you measure success?
Great question. You need to look at the data. Start with user engagement metrics. Are bounce rates down? Are people spending longer on the site, higher session duration? Are they visiting more pages per session? These indicate they're finding it useful and easy to navigate.
Okay, engagement. What else?
SEO rankings, obviously. Are your keyword positions improving, especially for mobile searches? Is your organic traffic growing? Tools like Google Analytics and Google Search Console are your best friends here. They track all this.
And the bottom line, conversions.
Absolutely. You need to evaluate conversion rates. Are more people buying Alex's t-shirts or filling out contact forms or whatever your goal is? Analyze the conversion funnel. Maybe even run A-B tests. Try slightly different responsive layouts or button placements to see what performs best. That gives you concrete ROI data.
A-B testing seems key there.
It can be very insightful, yeah. And finally, don't forget ongoing mobile performance checks. Use tools like GT Metrics or Pingdom regularly. Just because it was fast at launch doesn't mean it stays fast. Keep monitoring speed and functionality. A slow, responsive site isn't really succeeding.
Makes sense. So beyond just getting the basics right, are there best practices to really maximize responsive SEO, to really push things?
Definitely. First, think specifically about mobile keywords. People search differently on their phones, often more conversational, like t-shirt printing near me or asking questions. So use Google Keyword Planner or similar tools to find those mobile-specific, maybe longer tail or localized queries and weave them into your content naturally.
Right. Match the search intent.
Exactly. Second, relentless focus on load times. We keep saying it because it's that important. Optimize images constantly, minify code, leverage browser caching aggressively. Every millisecond counts on mobile.
Okay, keywords, speed, anything else?
Consider AMP accelerated mobile pages.
Ah, yes, AMP. How does that fit in?
So AMP is basically a separate, super stripped down version of your web page built using a restricted set of HTML and JavaScript. Google caches these pages heavily. So when someone clicks an AMP link in mobile search results, it loads almost instantly.
Like really fast.
Yeah, incredibly fast. It's great for content heavy sites like news publishers or blogs. It forces good performance practices. There are trade-offs, less design flexibility, but the speed boost can be significant for user experience and potentially SEO visibility in some contexts.
Interesting. That's a solid toolkit for today. But let's look ahead. Where is all this heading? What are the future trends we should be watching in responsive design?
Well, one big area is AI. Artificial intelligence is increasingly being integrated into design tools. We're seeing AI helping to generate responsive layouts, suggesting optimizations based on data, maybe even automating parts of the testing or adaptation process, making it quicker to build and refine responsive experiences.
AI making design smarter.
Potentially, yeah. Another growing trend is voice search optimization. As more people use voice assistants on their phones and smart speakers, designing content to answer natural language questions becomes crucial. Thinking about conversational keywords, structured data to help search engines understand answers, that's becoming part of the responsive, accessible puzzle.
And more immersive tech, like AR.
Augmented reality, yes. That's definitely on the horizon for enhancing engagement. Imagine using your phone's camera via a website to virtually try on Alex's t-shirts, seeing how they fit you right there in your room. That kind of interactive experience could become more common.
Wow, that's cool.
And finally, there's a growing push for sustainability in web design. It might sound odd, but websites consume energy. So there's increasing focus on building energy-efficient sites, optimizing code, reducing image file sizes, not just for speed, but for lower data transfer, choosing eco-friendly web hosting providers, making our digital footprint a bit greener.
Fascinating. AI, voice, AR, even sustainability. A lot to think about. So wrapping this up, what's the big takeaway for you, the listener? I mean, in a world where phones are just how most people access the internet, getting responsive design right isn't optional anymore, is it? It's fundamental. It's how businesses like Alex's actually improve the user experience, boost their SEO, and drive real results, engagement, conversions. It really is about building a digital presence that works for absolutely everyone, everywhere, no matter the device.
Exactly. And maybe here's a final thought to chew on. How might all these things we just talked about, AI, AR, voice, sustainability, how might they actually change the definition of what responsive or accessible even means in the next few years? It could challenge businesses like Alex's and everyone, really, to keep adapting way beyond just the best practices we know today. It's a constantly evolving space.
That's a really provocative question, definitely something to think about. So take a moment to reflect on your own website, your own digital presence. Does it truly meet the needs of today's multi-device users? And maybe start thinking about how it needs to evolve for tomorrow. We hope exploring these insights helps you apply them to your own situation.